Welcome to the ABN AMRO third quarter result call. At this time, all participants are on listen-only mode. Questions will be taken after the presentation, and to ask a question, please press star one. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'll hand the call over to Ms. Des Tonker. Ma'am, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the ABN AMRO call on the third quarter results. Kees van Dijkhuizen and Wietse Reehoorn will elaborate for about 20 minutes, after which we have room for Q&A. I would like to ask you to restrict the number of questions to three for the time being. Kees, over to you.
Thank you very much, Des. Good afternoon, good morning. Welcome to the call. Third quarter results 2014. Wietse and I will share our views on the results with you. As said, after we will open the call for Q&A. For the purpose of this call, we will use the short results presentation published on our website this morning, and a full version of this presentation will be published later today. Before we go into the details, I would like to bring to memory that we announced several changes in our business segmentation. In the Q3 numbers discussed today, as well the historic numbers, they are according to the new segmentation. Furthermore, today we announced a three to four-year program to accelerate the end-to-end digitization of the key customer processes in retail banking. It enables us to better attract new clients and more client business. Requires further concentration of the branch network and at the same time an upgrade of service and offering of the remaining branch network. Investment associated with this program is approximately 150 million for the coming 3 years. Now I would like to go to slide three, which shows the Q3 result highlights. We are very pleased with the Q3 result. Underlying net profit came to 450 million, which is an increase of 56% compared to Q3 of last year, which was 290. Strong performance is driven mainly by strong NII improvements, cost control, and continuation of decline in loan impairments. Year to date, we recorded an underlying result of 1,151, after the deduction of 201 million special levy for the SNS Bank, which is now completed in three quarters, and the euro 216 charge for the Dutch pension scheme change. That was a one-off in Q2. You end up at a reported profit of 734 in the first 9 months. Today, we also announced a 1.25 interim dividend over the first 6 months of this year. If we go to slide six, on cost income. We made good progress in realizing our 2017 targets. The cost income ratio for the first 9 months of 2014 was 58, compared to 61 last year. If we include the pro rata bank tax for 2014, cost income will be fractionally below 60 mark, which is just inside the 56-60 2017 target range. Cost income ratio for Q3 of 57 was one of the lowest recorded in the last 3 years, due to an income increase of 7% and flat cost. In Q4, we expect to record a cost income ratio above the one of Q3 due to the recognition of the 91 full year bank tax and an estimated restructuring charge of 50 to 75 in connection to the accelerated digitization processes in retail. As stated in previous calls, we continue to keep a firm grip on cost to make sure we reach our 2017 CI target. Hence, we also started upgrading our core IT systems. And the business continues to focus on efficiency improvements and client service enhancements. Then if we go to slide 7 on ROE, the 9-month ROE was 11%, up from almost 8% a year ago. The pro rata bank tax reduces the ROE by approximately 65 bips. The Q3 ROE was with 12.7, one of the highest recorded in the past 3 years. It shows the positive developments in operating result and decline in impairments, linked to economic improvements, especially in the Netherlands. The chart with the four-quarter moving average shows an ROE of approximately 8%, which also shows that we make good progress towards our target range of 9 to 12% set for 2017. And if we go to capital, slide 8, CET target. The third financial target we have is on capital. As you know, our 13% CET ratio already exceeds our target range of 11.5%-12.5% by 2017. On a fully loaded basis, this translates into 12.9%. Leverage ratio is currently at 3.4 phase-in and 3.2 fully loaded. These ratios are calculated in accordance with EBA, which does not allow netting of cash pools. If we go to Q3 results, slide 10 gives a brief overview of all the results, and I will go through some of them more specific. Slide 11, NII, NIM, and volumes. You see net interest income benefited from continued improvements in especially margins and lower funding costs. NII rose by 15% on the back of repricing effects in the mortgage and commercial loan book, as well as from a decline in funding cost. New mortgage markets margins continue to outpace the average margin of the total book. The same applies for mortgages originated 10 years ago, coming up for an interest rate reset. Savings margins also improved. Net client lending was 2.6 billion up in Q3, mainly driven by our ECT activities. Mortgage production is increasing. However, voluntary repayments together with the contractual repayments exceeded the new mortgage production, which causes a decline in the mortgage book of 800 million year to date. Clients continue to entrust more savings to us. Deposit volumes rose across almost all businesses. The online brand Moneyou continues to attract new clients and new money. Brand was already active in the Netherlands, Germany, and Belgium, and last quarter we also launched in Austria. We participated in the first LTRO initiative in order to assist in supporting SME lending in the Netherlands. So far, we observed that demand for SME loans continued to decline. However, we have approved 3% more SME loans in Q3 compared to Q2. The SME portfolio on balance still declines. If we go to slide 12, fee and other income. Fee income, which you can find on slide 12, has been stable for some time. As stated before, the impact from the abolishment of retrocession fees in the Netherlands was not material for the fees recorded in retail and private banking. Other operating income declined compared to Q3 last year, mainly from unrealized losses. If we go to slide 13 on expenses, you can see that expenses were more or less flat, were exactly flat, by the way, compared to the same quarter of last year. The neutral trend underlies our continued focus on cost control and efficiency improvements, meaning that cost hikes in one area are managed through additional cost efficiencies elsewhere. The cost level in Q3 2014 is, for instance, more or less in line with the level of Q1 2011. Slide 14 on impairments. Wieze will cover impairments in a minute, so I will jump to slide 15 and elaborate on the net result of the segments, the new segments. Slide 15. The good performance of retail banking is driven by higher NII from mortgages and client deposits, as well as lower impairments on both mortgages and other consumer loans. Result of private banking benefited from a decline in impairments and to a lesser extent, to an improved operating result. Assets under management volumes in private banking benefited from the acquisition of Credit Suisse Private Banking in Germany, which was completed in Q3. Acquisition makes Bethmann Bank, our private bank in Germany, the third largest in the country. Corporate banking shows mixed results. Both NII and fees showed healthy improvements, compensating the decline in other income. Yet the quarterly profit halved as impairments were up by 50%, mainly from the provisioning of a few larger specific files. Group functions recorded improved results, driven amongst others by enhanced cost allocation to the business segments for general cost and cost of maintaining the liquidity buffer. Wieze will now elaborate on some risk developments.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kees. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning, good afternoon. Let me take you through a couple of asset quality developments, start a little bit with the Dutch economy. The signs on the Dutch economy continue to look positive, which in time should further lower impairment levels. However, given the lumpiness of impairments in mainly medium to larger commercial loans, the level of impairments is expected to remain volatile in the short term. This masks the trend of lower impairments in the longer term. The housing market improvement in the Netherlands and the reflection thereof on mortgage impairments were encouraging, also in this quarter. More on that matter in a minute. The GDP started to grow, as of mid-2013. Several indicators, for example, consumer confidence and unemployment, have shown an overall improvement in the past 12 months. Today announced 0.2 GDP growth for Q3 and further decline of unemployment confirms that the Dutch economy is slowly recovering. Take you for a while back to slide 14. On the left-hand side, we show a moving average of impairments. Since last quarter, the trend line shows a meaningful decline. The chart on the right side shows the impairments by products. Mortgage impairments this quarter declined to 8 basis points, down from 11 in the previous quarter and 23 bips compared to Q3 a year ago. This decline results from a smaller impaired mortgage portfolio as a result from lower inflow in and a higher outflow out of the impaired mortgage portfolio. On commercial loans, the impairment charges were almost flat compared to Q2, however, increased significantly when compared to Q3 last year. Although we see the Dutch economy performing better, it is important to realize that impairment trends can easily change due to the lumpiness in impairment charges or releases of impairments on specific files in commercial and international clients. In this case, in Q3, we saw new impairments on a few larger files. Loan impairments for smaller commercial clients continue to decline, whereas, as said, the larger commercial clients for now show higher impairments. For your information, the commercial clients we're talking about here are the larger one with a turnover above 30 million. In Q3, the impairments were mostly recorded in the industry sectors, industrial goods and services, retail, and real estate. Let's move to slide 16. It shows you that the impaired ratio has started to stabilize for most products. In absolute terms, the level of impaired total consumer loans declined slightly by 41 million, whereas the impaired commercial loans rose by 227 million. Going to slide 17, especially on the mortgages, we see past due and impaired mortgages exposures trending down. That has been a while since we saw these ratios decline. As mentioned before, the Dutch housing market shows positive developments. The year-to-date number of houses sold is up plus 38%. The year-to-date Dutch mortgage volume is up plus 27%. House prices gained 3% in value since the low levels in June 2013. The impairments of 8 basis points this quarter is the lowest recorded in the last 14 quarters. The average loan-to-market value of the full mortgage portfolio was 84%, just down compared to the 85% from last quarter and equal to that of year-end 2013. Average loan-to-market value, excluding NHG mortgages, is around 80%. Bear in mind that around half of these NHG-guaranteed mortgages have a loan-to-market value above 100%. The impact from the new Dutch tax rules for mortgages is clearly visible in the new mortgage production. Mortgages with redemption features, i.e. annuity and linear, account each quarter for a growing portion of the total loan book, whereas the other loan types, including interest-only loans, shows a continuous decline. Although the portion of mortgage loans with a loan-to-market value above 100% steadily declines since year-end by approximately 1.7 billion. This is the result of extra prepayments combined with slightly higher house prices. A couple of remarks on the AQR stress test, which is in the slide pack at 18. The overall conclusion from the AQR is that ABN AMRO did very well. The AQR impact on CET1 was very low, negligible. In total, over 60% of risk-weighted assets was reviewed. Portfolios covered in the AQR included, amongst others, the residential real estate, which is our mortgage book, real estate-related files, our commercial real estate, small SMEs, larger SMEs, shipping, and large corporates. In the results, we see proof of being generally conservatively provisioned. Our compliance with existing IFRS and EBA rules therefore means that there are and will be no impairment adjustments in the P&L resulting from the recent AQR exercise. Both the stress test scenarios were completed within significant distance to the hurdles. The stress test results confirmed that ABN AMRO is well capitalized, has sufficient buffers to absorb losses and economic shocks. We are not required to take additional capital measures. We aim to maintain strong capital ratios, even under stress, as part of our moderate risk profile. Looking at the list of results for all banks, we can state that we have a very limited exposure to those banks that failed the stress test. Let me wrap up before we open the call. We're pleased with the Q3 results. We are well on track to meet our strategic ambitions and to our 17 targets. We comfortably passed the AQR and stress test. Retail banking is going to enhance the digital customer experience, which requires an additional investment of 150 million and likely causes a further reduction of 650 to 1,000 FTEs. A quick word on the IPO. Our preparations are on track, and there is not much to add, except for the fact that, of course, the very good outcome of the AQR for ABN AMRO support those preparations. Operator, can you open the call for questions?
Yes, thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name and company name when prompted. Also, press star 2. One moment, please, while we wait for the first question. All right, thank you. Our first question comes from Matthias Stewart of KBC Securities. Sir, your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my question. Just a first question on the digitization and branch network restructuring you announced this morning. Could you provide some color on the cost savings you expect to realize thanks to these measures? And then secondly, on the impairment outlook, you're guiding for higher impairments in the fourth quarter. I guess this is just a seasonal increase you would expect, or what are the drivers here? And then looking forward to 15 and beyond, what's the sort of normalized level of impairments you should expect? And then lastly, on the Basel III leverage ratio, dropped 40 basis points quarter on quarter. I guess it's purely linked to the new EBA definition. Could you confirm this and also provide some your view on whether there is room to optimize the balance sheet in an attempt to improve the leverage ratio going forward? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll start with your first question and take the impairments, and I can say something on leverage ratio. Well, we do not have exactly a cost result of the operation. As said, it will be around 650 to 1,000 people, which of course is clear that this will lower cost, but it's not from that angle that we started this discussion. However, of course, there will be cost savings. We will be more clear about that, say, next year. We want to inform all the people next year who will be who will be affected by this operation, and then we can also give the results in cost. But you can easily make calculations, of course, that it will be, well, we think around, on average it would be around 50 million or something like that. With respect to impairments, perhaps, Richie, you can say something on that?
Sure, Kees, thank you. The outlook for this year, we've said that for the whole year we expect impairments to be lower than last year. Clearly, the current impairment number in Q3 will not be the same as anticipated in Q4. So Q4 will be higher, however, lower than last year, Q4. Why do we expect it will be higher? That's more on the commercial loan book side. We still have our financial recovery and restructuring department quite heavily working on a number of workouts. So we expect actually in Q4 somewhat more impairments there. Your question as to the normalized cost of risk or impairment number, very difficult to give because, I mean, we are not in a normalized world. It's far from normal, all the circumstances in terms of the economy, low interest rates, a very lengthy crisis. A way to look at it, actually, is if you look back in the year 2011, this bank reported 900 million impairments. Last year it was 1.7, this year it will be lower. Well, we expect actually if the recovery of the Dutch economy, and as you know, we're pretty geared to the Dutch economy with our loan book, if it will continue to recover, we do expect, of course, that impairments will be to normalized levels. And a last word about this, the trend, which we clearly see in terms of consumer and mortgage impairments, which is trending down, that we also think will continue to be the case for the next year.
Then your third question on leverage ratio, indeed, has to do with the 40 bips you mentioned. 30 to 40 bips is indeed related to the new EBA definition regarding netting, which is allowed in IFRS terms, but we expect it to be allowed going forward in the leverage ratio definition. Yes, we think that we can further optimize balance sheet in that respect. For instance, we have a cash pooling product which we want to optimize, and we are already talking with clients on this. Secondly, of course, when AT1 is possible to do in a fiscal in the fiscal structure, and the Parliament is has approved it, that is also a possibility, of course, going forward. And finally, of course, the profit we do not dividend out is also, of course, an element which will improve the leverage ratio going forward.
Okay, thanks. And if I could just follow up on the AT1, how much could you theoretically raise? I'm asking this because some regulators, like in the UK, intend to cap the amount of AT1 in the leverage calculation, so I'm not sure whether that will be the case in the Netherlands as well. Thank you.
So far, there is no cap announced. So basically, what we would like to do is, if at all, fill the 1.5% bucket, which is currently the one you can fill. But a lot will depend on the outcome, which is going to take place this weekend in Brisbane. And other than that, I think I'll leave it with this.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Both months are treasure.
Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you. Next from Cor Kluis of Rabobank. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, Cor Kluis, Rabobank. Got a few questions. First of all, concerning the retail operations, you saw the risk-weighted assets going up there from 35 to 37.5 billion. It seems that you have been increasing the risk weighting on your mortgages somewhat. What is at this moment the risk weighting on your Dutch mortgages? That's my first question. Second question is in the group functions. We saw a great improvement of the net interest income there. You mentioned in the press release that it's largely due to improved ALM mismatch and active duration management. However, I saw that the duration only went up from 3.9 to 4.0 years. What exactly happened there, and can we work with this positive net interest income in the group functions going forward, or is this something we have to take into account? Last question is about the funding value adjustments. You mentioned that it was minus 44 million euros. Could you explain what this exactly is and how we have to look to this line going forward? That were my three questions.
I will start with the core with your question around the risk weight on the Dutch mortgage book. Indeed, in the retail segment, it went up. The risk weight for our Dutch mortgage book is 13.9%. It's a combined risk weight for our total book, so it's including NHG loans. The NHG loans are around 25% of our book. And naturally, those loans have a lower risk weight. The reason for this increase is a review and refinement of risk parameters, and then you should think of some older impaired mortgages and some lower Q rates, which have played a role into this.
Yeah. Okay.
Then on the group functions and your question on the active steering of the duration, it's not necessarily the direction which is the active part. The active part is more on how to, let's say, steer your duration between predefined limits when steering up and when steering down. So it's a kind of buy and hold of receiver and payer positions and selling them when we feel it's appropriate, and by doing this, steering the curve upwards or downwards. So the natural trend of the balance sheet is downward, so basically we steer up because we think that's the best thing to do in the current interest rate environment. But when you steer up, you do not necessarily need to do this in one shot. You can also do this in a few steps. And that's what we call active steering, and by doing this, we gain some extra NIP.
Okay.
And NIP is also related, especially also when you compare with Q3 of last year, which is also mentioned, with that we allocate more liquidity, cost of the liquidity buffer to the business. I think that's a second element, which is, by the way, a structural one. So I think that's a second element I would like to mention here. With respect to the funding value adjustment, that's new IFRS. Well, it's not new IFRS actually, but it's now being implemented by most banks these days, or will be implemented in Q4. We now did it already in Q3. It's related to uncollateralized derivatives. When they have a negative position, we have to post collateral, and the funding cost for that is now included. And the effect you see is a large effect of 44 million, which of course is a one-off related to the position we have right now. Of course, there will be movements going forward, but not. We don't expect them, of course, to be of a magnitude which you have seen here in this quarter.
Okay.
And finally, of course, it goes. It's a timing. It's a fair value timing position. So of course, it pulls the part to zero in the end.
Yeah. Okay. Very clear. Thanks.
Thank you. Next from Benoit Petrarque of Kepler, your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. Actually three questions on my side. First one will be on the ICT business. We've seen a pretty big fall of the energy and commodity prices. Could you run us through your sensitivity to lower energy and commodity prices, in terms of volumes, but maybe more important, could you just help us to understand how it will actually work in terms of cost of risk going forward if oil price stay very low and, could even potentially go lower. And then the second question will be on the cost of risk. Commercial clients, my cost of risk for commercial clients at almost 300 bps this quarter. I think it's 100 bps on international clients. What type of cross-cycle cost of risk would you expect for these businesses? We get new reporting, so it's very hard to see kind of what has been the long-term or longer-term across the cycle average on the businesses. And also I'm asking because peers are showing much lower figures on cost of risk for this segment. And then maybe the last question will be on the DGS and the EU European Resolution Fund. How much charge are you expecting as from next year from DGS and the Resolution Fund, please? Thank you very much.
Let me start to answer the questions on the ECT book, also in relation to your question to price sensitivity and the commercial clients' cost of risk. And in case probably then you could answer the third one. Your first question is an interesting one. We could, I think, debate it for 1 hour, but we should not do that. I mean, if you look to our loan book in ECT, that is half of that is commodities. The other half is transportation, which is mainly shipping offshore, et cetera, and we have a bucket of energy. The prices of oil and commodities have gone down. Normally, that would mean that, let's say, the lines we have opened for those clients are used less. So it is not a matter of cost of risk lower or higher. It's simply a utilization of lines which have an impact of the price changes. Bear in mind that we deal a lot with companies, also within the commodities area, who themselves hedge their position in terms of price risk. So that's not the risk we are running there. I think it's important to mention. And as said again, to avoid any misunderstanding, we are not in the commodities trading, but we are in the lending business to commodity traders. And that's a big difference, I think. Your question as to the through the cycle, the normalized cost of risk for commercial clients. Well, as said again, we are not in a normalized situation, so we have to see how that will look. And going forward, we will, I think, be better in focusing on what would be there the right through the cycle cost of risk. I think you're right that if you look to the current levels, commercial clients, ABN AMRO, compared to peers, for example, ING, is high. But bear in mind that you should divide between the Netherlands book and abroad. And as you know, we are pretty geared to the Dutch economy, where especially also the SME have suffered largely from the crisis. And as said again, we do see now the first signs of recovery, but we'll have to see how that plays out. Okay, it's probably for you the third question.
Yeah, fine. The deposit guarantee scheme, European deposit guarantee scheme, and resolution, European resolution scheme. Well, we do not know exactly yet the amounts, but roughly, I would say 150-200. Depends a bit on the deposit guarantee if it starts the 1st of July. But also about if there's tax deductibility of these items or not, and of course the final calculation of the resolution scheme also has to be calculated here. But very roughly, this is the effect, and then that of course next year is of course around 2% of cost income. So that is and it's a structural one. So we will not eliminate it like SNS levy this year of the 200 million. So we will take it into the structural items like the banking tax. So that indeed is a serious amount of money to be paid from next year onwards. Yes.
Okay, just to come back on the ECT question, so you will kind of expect lower volumes but stable cost of risk. Does not impact cost of risk, but that will probably impact volumes going forward. The lower.
Yeah. As said again, the price fluctuations in itself will not have an impact on cost of risk. So that is not what we have as an outlook there.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Next from Albert Ploeg of EFA, your line is now open.
Yeah, hi. It's Albert Ploeg from ING. Two questions from my side. First one is capital related. You already flagged yourself the interim dividend that you've paid. And if I look at the capital position, your fully loaded T1 ratio is already north of your target. I know there's some strain with all the new regulations still on leverage potentially. But how should I link basically the leverage ratio discussion with your capital targets and how I should look at your capital basis? Because it seems that in a way you're overcapitalized on at least on the common equity ratio. That's my first question. And the second one is on the new disclosure, which is quite helpful, but of course also leads to some questions. One is on the disclosure of the capital markets solutions segment. What I basically noticed there that especially the other income line has gone down by 60% year to date, and also quite low in the third quarter, which also resulted in a small operating loss underlying. How should I look at this this segment, and is there anything still what you could qualify as one-off, or should we expect at least some modest losses on a quarterly basis going forward for several more quarters? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for questionings for the questions. With respect to capital, I think we, as I think also other banks, are awaiting discussions like this weekend in Brisbane on TLAC before we are going to, well, make a kind of, well, optimize our capital position actually with respect to all the items, quarter one, AT1, and tier two, and perhaps unsecured with a special clause, because that's not all clear yet. However, we think we will end up somewhere between 20 and 25. We have a good starting position with 18 plus already, so that's good. But as said, we will await that before we well, before we will come back on this item to get more clarity on that. So I hope you understand that one. Thanks for being positive about new disclosure. We have last week we gave the figures on 2013 and 2014 comparables, and indeed we will, by the way, also give history 2012 with the Q4 results. And especially, I think more disclosure is now given in the area of corporate banking, because there were always a lot of questions about commercial and merchant banking. We always had to explain a lot there. So I think now what you can see is indeed the commercial clients, international clients, and then the capital market solutions. Yeah, with respect to the remark you made on the other income decline, the fair value adjustment minus 44 million is in capital market solutions. So it's not in treasury, or so it's not in group functions, which you might perhaps think, but it's here, and that's the 44, which means that the 47 decline of other operating income from Q3 to Q3 2013 to 2014 is related, well, more or less fully related to this funding value adjustment.
Which
also means going forward that, of course, this item will be higher on average, of course, going forward from Q4 onwards.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Next from Lee Street, your line is now open.
Hello, thank you for taking my question. Two from me. Firstly, can you just give us a bit of colour on where you expect your leverage ratio requirement to ultimately end up? And secondly, just in relation to the last question, on TLAC, you refer to ending up at 20-25%. Is that because you expect TLAC to spread to the Dutch market, or just because you expect to be able to match what the larger G-SIBs are actually having to apply? That's the two from me. Thank you.
Leverage ratio officially 3%. In the Netherlands, discussion about 4%. However, we notice also in Europe that there is a lot of discussion about this 4%. So we are above the 3. But as said, we will also look at improvements in the direction of 4 going forward, because that is something we expect the market might go in that direction. But as said, not clear. And we understood also from the position of our Minister of Finance, Minister Dijsselbloem, that he would like to have this 4% in a European context. So that makes it level with other countries. TLAC, the figure I mentioned, is indeed a kind of forecast prediction, including buffers, which will be for everybody then and also for us, so not specific for... of course, for G-SIBs, in principle, we expect it more or less that also D-SIBs will also be influenced by this TLAC discussion.
Okay, thank you very much. That's very clear.
Thank you. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name and company name when prompted. To cancel, press star 2. One moment, please, while we wait for the next question. Once again, that is star one to ask a question.
Any further? Yes?
No questions on queue at this time.
There are no questions? Well, then I think we will close the call. I would like to thank you all on behalf of us here for being there, and well, hope to speak to you on the Q4 pages. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.